All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.
This is Minnesota Today from NPR News for Friday, March 20th. I'm Nina Moyney. I'm a general assignment reporter here at NPR News, and like so many people, I am working from home these days, so I'm recording this from under a blanket in my house in Minneapolis. Here's what you need to know about COVID-19 in Minnesota today. Minnesota officials report there are now 115 cases. Two people are in the ICU. And today, Governor Walz signed an executive order prohibiting price gouging during the COVID-19 pandemic. Attorney General Keith Ellison noted last week that dramatically raising prices on essential items during an emergency is not against the law in Minnesota. Walz says the vast majority of people are not taking advantage of the crisis, but his order is necessary to rein in bad actors.
We were seeing hand sanitizer for $60 a bottle. Others were hawking $1 a squirt for hand sanitizer, and these things are real. That's not how we are. Many of them can come from out of state, and this gives the state and the Attorney General the ability to crack down.
Ellison is urging lawmakers to criminalize price gouging in Minnesota. Earlier on Politics Friday, Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka talked with NPR News political editor Mike Mulcahy about how his party is trying to walk the line between supporting Governor Walz and looking out for people affected by all of the closures. The Republican from Nisswa says a crumbling economy would present more dangers.
I just want to make sure we're having conversations and all voices are heard. But to be clear, the governor is in a difficult spot himself. I know all 50 governors are listening to the president and trying to work together. And I also want to work with our governor to make sure that he makes the best decisions he can.
Some of your members said it was a mistake for him to shut down bars, restaurants, and all those other businesses. Do you agree with that?
Well, I don't have all the facts that the governor has. There's different directions we can go. Mitigation, which is, slowing this thing down, or suppression, which means trying to stop it. But I think the frustration that you hear from folks is repeated from people. They hear that this is literally destroying their small businesses and they may not come back. And so that's the other thing that we have to balance, is if we ruin the economy in our attempt to stop the coronavirus, that's another danger. And so these are difficult times, and that's why I don't want to try to second guess the governor or the president. I'm trying to work with them the best I can.
The governor has responded that some rural hospitals don't have the resources to respond to a surge in seriously ill people, if that's what happens. How concerned about that are you?
Well, the hospitals have been communicating that they don't have the ICUs and the ventilators, and what are we going to do? And the bigger spread at this point is in the metro area. If you look across the country, it's the big metropolitan areas that seem to have the biggest spread. But it is a very real issue. So, again, the governor is trying to work to find other resources. This is an extremely difficult time for all of us, but that is a very real issue.
That was Senate Majority Leader Paul Gazelka. Morning Edition host Kathy Werzer got an update today from the University of Minnesota. Researchers there are testing a group of drugs to see if they'll work to prevent or treat COVID-19. The drugs themselves are not new. They were originally designed as anti-malarial, blood pressure, and Ebola medications. Kathy talked to Tim Shocker. He's vice dean for research at the U's Medical School. He said they're converting biotech labs to process testing kits and fast-tracking their review process for research proposals.
We are still following all of the rules of research, as you know, as we have to and we should, but we've just expedited the process for this crisis so we can get things moving really quickly.
He says the U has developed its own test for the virus. They're facing the same problem as labs all over the country, though. That's a shortage of reagents or chemicals necessary to make it work. All over the state, people are stocking up for a few weeks and maybe more of social distancing. Grocery stores say there's no shortage of food, but people are still anxious to gather supplies, and store workers are racing to keep up. Here's John Enger's report from the front lines.
Trayvon Teller didn't see any of this coming. The panic buying, I mean. He works at a metro area grocery store. He's not a manager and not supposed to speak on the store's behalf, so he asked that we keep it at that. He took a couple weeks off last month to study for his exams at Augsburg University. Before his time off, everything at the store was normal. People were buying the regular stuff, avocados, hard cheese. When he came back to work last weekend, everything had changed. People were in full-on stockpiling mode.
And a lot of the time it's not even like stuff that I think people would like need to stock up on. Like I saw a guy walk out with like 9 bottles of olive oil.
He didn't expect things to move this quickly. Now his college has extended its spring break. His classes will probably be online for a while. And every day, the store where he works is packed with customers planning to be stuck inside for weeks. Teller and thousands of grocery store workers like him have found themselves on the front lines of the pandemic. They're around people all day long, breathing air other people breathed first, touching things other people have touched, reaching for the hand sanitizer every few minutes. It's risky, underpaid, and not really the job they signed up for.
I was just talking to a nurse who was coming through my line. The way we both were like describing it was pretty much the same. And I'm not a college-trained nurse experiencing this. I'm just like at a grocery store.
But here's the thing. Teller likes this new, slightly terrifying version of his job a lot better. He never took much identity from his work. At best, it was a way to make rent. At worst, he said, it felt like selling out. Teller, you see, plans to go to seminary after college. He wants to be what he describes as a radical Lutheran pastor. Emphasis on radical. He cares deeply about social justice. Working in an industry that doesn't always take the best care of its staff seemed morally suspect.
Well, I don't know, this could be my college education getting to me, but I definitely buy into I'm being exploited by my company every day. And so, like, this is me not only making profit for the company, but also, like, helping people get, like, what they actually need.
All the stockpiling aside, grocery stores are vital right now. They can't shut down, and they can't be run from home with an internet connection. Teller says, in this moment, he feels a real purpose. He had planned to spend time with his family over spring break, but his mother has health concerns that put her at risk if she gets COVID-19. His grandfather is almost 80, also at risk. So he's not even going over for visits. He's just going to work, and then back to his apartment. He's staying away from the people he loves. He's young, just 19. He figures he'll be okay. And in the meantime, he wants to do his part to make things better. He's even working with leaders at his church to start a grocery delivery service for those in their community who need it. The idea is still in its early stages, but he hopes to make it work. He has a company discount, after all. He might as well use it. John Enger, NPR News.
That idea, delivering food to people at home, we're hearing from lots of people all over the state trying to ramp up similar efforts. That includes organizations that were already providing meals for seniors before this crisis began. Our reporter Dan Gunderson, who's based in Moorhead, has been checking in with some of those groups.
This week, senior center sites where daily meals are served are shutting down as the state moves to curb the spread of the coronavirus. So the organizations that provide those meals now need to increase home delivery or offer curbside pickup sites. Darla Waldner with the Dancing Sky Area Agency on Aging oversees meal programs in 21 western Minnesota counties. She's hoping the state can ease regulations that would allow more flexibility in using funds to provide more home-delivered meals.
We actually get one pot of money that's for congregant dining and one is for home-delivered, and there's just some rules in place that you can't transfer back and forth.
Waldner says organizations like hers are also going to need more volunteers to deliver meals because most of their volunteers are seniors themselves, members of the age group most susceptible to the highly contagious coronavirus. I'm Dan Gunderson, Moorhead.
You can find more coverage of what's going on online today. That's at nprnews.org. That's it for now. I'm Nina Moyney, and we'll have more this weekend here on Minnesota Today.